You are listening to the Green Lantern Corecast, episode number 8, for late September 2010.
Today are Andrew NDB, Bob spelled backwards, Brandon West, Colton, Eric phoning in on the phone, Kuhan, and Karen Bing. How's everybody doing tonight?
Awesome.
I think I'm phoning the show more than Eric is.
That's sad.
And today we're going to be discussing the latest issues of Brightest Day, Green Lantern Emerald Warriors, and Green Lantern Corps. To start it off, the latest issue of Brightest Day kicks off with more Aquaman and Firestorm action. Honestly, we're expecting an issue based on Firestorm alone, technically because we haven't seen him in the last couple issues of Brightest Day entire. So now we're getting more explanation as to what Firestorm's meaning in the universe is. And honestly, I've known the Big Bang. He's the Big Bang, really. I don't get this. Anybody else want to chime on this?
I mean, he's the Big Bang now. I thought it was Damage. I mean, apparently parts of Zero Hour aren't in canon anymore. I mean, it's a silly thing to begin with. I didn't like any more with Damage I do with Firestorm, but it's kind of silly to...
One could say that it's just part of the spark and it's been kind of spread around.
One could say that, I suppose.
I think
the creation of the Big Bang is like a VD.
Okay, Eric, what were you saying?
I think it's an effort to make every element of the story connect back to, like, the creation of the universe, therefore making Brightest Day and Black Man the most important story ever told. You know, I don't know. I think, and it's funny because they're like, Firestorm, you're so powerful. And it's like, but he's a guy who can turn water into, like, trash cans. You know, he can turn, like, dude into granola. Like, he's already the most powerful guy in the world. He doesn't need, like, this extra thing. And it, I don't know, it doesn't really make it that much more interesting to me. Honestly. But, I mean, whatever. They got to do something. I was kind of more interested with the unnecessary fight scene of the issue, but I mean, you know, I mean, whatever. I've kind of given up Brightest Day at this point. I mean, I read it, but you know, because I have to. So
I don't read it.
Kuhan bailed earlier.
Yeah, so come on, just drop it.
Because it's not like him being the Big Bang is going to affect the towers any more than making them just bigger. You know what I mean? Like he might end up being more powerful from this, but it'll just make him explode bigger or something. Like that's it's a moot. And I do think, like Andrew said, Damage being the Big Bang, and I think it's more interesting anyway, because then it's kind of like, why would the Big Bang have the ability to turn water into salt? You know, like, does it really make it? I mean, because it's not a Big Bang isn't like a creation universe, as in somebody's, like, making the universe. It's like a cataclysmic collision of, you know, energy that created the universe. So it's not like,
You would think the atom would be more the Big Bang than anything else.
Oh, whatever. The atom's history also was right in the middle of Brightest Day, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Anyway, let's move. Bob, what you thought?
Well, I don't know. All this stuff just got my nipples hard.
That Bob. Yeah. Wah, wah, wah.
Nothing at all. Nothing at all.
I mean, I don't know really what to say. I actually like the Firestorm thing going on, though. I'm real curious what direction they're going to take with it. I mean, but I don't know. Actually, the Brightest Day in 10, that's the one we're talking about, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
I don't know. I mean, I like Firestorm as a character, but this issue, I don't know, it just left something. I mean, I don't know. Once again, I do like Firestorm, but this issue just kind of, I guess it let me down. I've only read it once, and normally I read it like 5 or 6 times any new comic, and this one I've only read the one time, and I don't know. I think, you know, unless they pick up steam real quick, I mean, I'm more curious about this whole new Aqua Lab than I am Firestorm.
Karen, what did you think of the issue?
So I went to my local comic store to pick it up, and I figured, what the hell, I'd try to pick them all up at once, and then they were missing a couple, and I got distracted, and I wandered away. So I didn't read it. And now I'm looking at the thing, and I think I'm going to be pretty much useless this podcast, too. Damn it!
I'm always
I'm
useless.
I'm glad you're
so
pulling your weight, Karen.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
No need to get all freaking blasphemy on this, Andrew.
God!
This America, not sit around like a jerk to cut. Okay?
Andrew, would you... Please. All right, no. Here we brought up your sentence. Brandon, what do you think?
Well, I didn't really get into everything. I mean, it's
well, we're actually going to get into the Aqualad thing in a second. You already brought up your feelings about Firestorm and Damage.
Right. I mean, it was the two side stories that I really liked the most in Brightest Day, and they were brought to the forefront here. So I mostly liked the issue. It was neat.
Right.
Can you explain, I'm sorry. Can you explain, what's the big deal about this whole Damage thing?
Well, it's not a big deal. I mean, even in Zero Hour, the whole thing was when Hal restarted the universe and he was going to start merging stuff and whatever to make the perfect universe where nothing bad ever happens, and how maybe one universe isn't going to be enough and maybe he's going to make more universes. When they stopped Hal from doing that as Parallax, what they did was they had Damage kind of recreate the Big Bang to set things back the way they were with small changes and stuff. But as far as we're concerned, that should still be the Big Bang that we see in the DCU, more or less. I mean, who knows what the Alexander Luther shit did, but it's just silly to now give this and graft it onto Firestorm and say, no, he's the Big Bang now. But
or a fraction of the creation energy of the Big Bang.
Yeah.
I mean, technically speaking, what they really should do is they should just make Firestorm and his ability, an aspect of the Yahweh creature, whatever it ended up being called, the big white thing that made everything. Because technically speaking, if you're talking about a conscious entity that's creating stuff out of nothing, that's what Firestorm does. So you could always just say, oh, he's actually this. And how much more interesting would the story be if, six guys just like Firestorm showed up, and you're like, why do they all have the same power? That's crazy. They're too powerful. And it turns out that's the translation of, the idea of angels.
We don't know that the white entity creates anything. That's never been stated. I read him more as the avatar of life, just as Parallax didn't create fear.
When white energy was fueling a rabid Sinestro, he created scimitars out of nothing, right?
Well, constructs, right. a green ring can do that also, but it's not.
Yes,
that's not...
so in many veins, the Firestorm himself was a Green Lantern, and just because he could, transmutate air to freaking,
I also talked about swords.
Yeah, that's true.
Also, the idea that all white constructs stay and they don't dissipate, even
except for the ones in Blackest Night number 8, apparently. Yeah.
Scimitars aren't still in the ground somewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe you have to willingly remove the constructs for them to go away.
It says specifically they don't go away. You can't get rid of them and stuff. So, I don't know.
So once created, it cannot be uncreated?
I mean, I guess there is the back door that he could say, Sinestro uncreated them somehow. Will it, willfully?
Yeah,
I don't know.
He has more, experience with a ring, with ring slinging.
Did they create any?
What?
Constructs?
In Blackest Night, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
A
big-ass sword.
And stuff.
Yeah,
I don't remember any of that shit.
Oh yeah, it was all there. Not just in Blackest Night 8, but also in Green Lantern 52 or 51.
Yeah, in the 52 he had that, for whatever it was. He had the thing where he blew up the whole street and it was this big gigantic white tube that was the size of a building and shit. It's is that still there? Did somebody forget that? It's just in the middle of the street, we're like, oh shit, I forgot about that gigantic thing the size of a building.
How do you feel about the wings and the scimitar, Bob?
Well, I'm still hung up a little bit on this whole the Blackest Night thing. One thing that kind of bugged me, I wish they would have killed off a lot of, say, Steel, and I wish they would have killed off John Stewart and a couple of those characters. And then
Black Lightning, too.
Yeah, just kill off all the black guys, why don't you?
Yeah.
They kill all minorities?
Well, they're already killing all the Chinese guys.
No, listen.
They're working on it. No, yeah.
I'm sure he has a reasonable explanation.
Hold on.
Bob, explain.
Hold on, there's a point to this, believe it or not. I got a point going on here. I just think it would have been hysterical when Hal divided up this new entity, life entity, and said, we're the White Lantern Corps. I mean, I just think that would have been hysterical if we got Jon Stewart as a White Lantern. It kind of would have made his whole, all I got to do is stay black comment just null and void, because then he'd have been a White Lantern. Never mind. Sorry, I need more beer.
So what you're saying is you wanted
No, I agree.
You wanted everybody to get the white power.
Yeah. Deep down, doesn't every black man want?
You wanted Jon Stewart under the control of the white power.
I just thought it'd be funny.
That's hilarious.
This whole conversation is making my liberal insides go bad.
I only feel like it's funny because he's doing a parody of what DC actually is doing, where they're kind of getting rid of all the minority, quote unquote, by accident. You know. So.
Oh, I accidentally killed Ryan Choi. My bad.
The female Dr. Light accidentally fell down a flight of stairs.
Discussing Aqualad and his appearance again in Brightest Day for the rest of the issue.
Yes.
I want to talk about the Aqualad stuff and how his origin is like this same origin. I mean, it's interesting because it's Aquaman's origin again, and I think it's the same origin of everybody, you know, and it's kind of like watching Smallville again, and it's kind of clear that, you know, I mean, I don't want to be like the guy who's on Jeff Johns every single time I get on here, but if he's doing it to himself, I'm not doing it to him, you know what I mean? That he just kind of like, every new character he comes up with, it's just derivative of every other character that's ever been popular, you know? So it's kind of like they just took Smallville, plugged in a black kid, and then, you know, made his dad a bad guy and stuff. I mean, it's, I don't know. And basically, it's just, I kind of like the Aquaman story. It's probably my favorite part of Brightest Day, because there's not a lot of story. It's just fighting, and Ivan Reyes, I think, is doing a really good job drawing all these Aquaman characters and stuff. I kind of just like Aquaman, so that's my only preference. But, this was very generic, and I didn't really think there was any too much. It wasn't that interesting, and really, you didn't even meet his dad until his dad's like, I've been lying to you your whole life. It's like, so you've been lying to him the past three pages? Like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know. It wasn't very direct, right?
I thought
can't you?
Whenever Eric goes first, I feel bad about having a different opinion, because I feel like I'm a jerk.
This was fucking great. You call it generic. I call it awesome. What's his name? Fuck. Jackson Hyde is another Aquaman, but it's still done well. Hunter Zolomon is the same as any other character, any other speedster, and he's still done well. One of the best stories ever told. This is just
what I liked, just really quick, because I feel like I always say stuff like it. I like that the dad tried to kill himself, and it didn't work out, you know what I mean? Because, like, that always happens. Like, the dad is always like, I'll kill myself here to save your life, and that will teach you a lesson.
And then he actually does, but in this case, he didn't.
Yeah.
He does, and it's always, like, overdone, and as I'm reading this, I'm like, come on, Jeff Johns, really, like, you don't even care if people, I mean, obviously, he's like, it doesn't matter, they're going to pay me millions of dollars to do this dumb shit anyway, I might as well just rip off other people. He went out of his way to change it up a little bit. It doesn't work, yeah.
If you didn't get any chill bumps from that last Aquaman scene, then you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah,
when he's coming in.
Yeah, you know the
overdue of me kicking your ass, Black Manta.
You know the spot. Yeah, it was a good effective transition there. A good
the art. The art here is better than it was in Blackest Night.
I wish they would have redesigned Black Manta. They didn't really. I mean, not just I'm about this issue specifically, but in Brightest Day and at large.
They gotta make that head smaller.
Yeah, it's the same costume it's always been, and this is,
It always worries you out because he has a long neck and then has that soft brain.
Black guy again. Well, I remember he was a manta ray that they poured into that suit the last time he showed up. So, I guess that he's a black guy again technically counts as a redesign, right?
Wait, where did that happen?
The last time I remember seeing Black Manta,
where
was in it was in a late Aquaman story before he got canceled, before he died in Crisis.
No, because I just read the ones before 1 year later, and Black Manta is in that, and he looks exactly like this. The ones read before 1 year later.
Because I know there's Underworld Unleashed, and turned into like a...
No, it's... Peter David hadn't written since the volume before that.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, he must be referring to David.
No, this is after.
Jurgens did write them.
Jurgens did like 2 issues before it was canceled.
He did 12.
Black Man is Black Man is still. Black Man is still being like a monster when he showed up in the Kevin Smith Green Arrow stuff.
Oh.
And I know it was like an Underworld Unleashed thing where he was like a man where he wasn't actually wearing the armor for a while, and then he started wearing the armor again.
Oh, was he one of the dudes that said yes to Neron? I totally forgot that, if that's okay. He did? Is that
he
right?
Turned into like a manta ray. Yeah, wow. I believe so.
Oh.
Whatever.
You go back and... Yeah.
Well, there's that.
Now, Eric, I could have sworn that your favorite story in this book is the Hawk story.
The one that was... Yeah.
Not many people for that one is the favorite.
I don't know. I thought that... from what I could tell, everybody loved that story.
I love that story in this issue. I did love that story in this issue. I want to hear Bob's reaction to the Aqualad stuff.
Blackwalad.
No!
Wow.
Damn it!
Ah, yes, it wasn't me this time.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what I think. I think you guys are right. I think they should have killed off the father, but I would have done it in a very, very creative sort of way. I mean, I'd have found some sort of way.
Yeah, it would have been like Saw.
and then just bring him back as like a Black Lantern again. That would have just, like, thrown everybody off. Everybody's been like, well, who the hell's this guy? I mean, because
I believe Wes was the one who said that Black Lanterns wouldn't be showing up for at least another year or two. And here they are in issue 10 of Brightest Day.
I know, and I mean, it just really, I mean, I love the character going back to Firestorm for just a second. I mean, I love the character of Firestorm. I've loved every, like, different version of him. That's come out, but I don't know. I'm just issue 10. I mean, I only read it the one time, and I've actually been skimming through it while you guys were talking again. And there were quite a few redeeming things in it, but in the same vein, it just felt like they threw a bunch of stuff together, and it really didn't progress any further. I mean, if someone just picked up issue 10 and it was their first issue of the series, they'd have probably just said, screw this, I'm not even going to mess with the rest of the series, because it didn't give enough of anything, really. I don't know, it just didn't feel like it progressed the story enough for me to give us much of anything. If they would have killed off Aqualad's, whatever he is, stepfather, adopted father, whatever, I just think it would have been funny. I mean, here's a character that only existed for 3 pages, and he comes back, you know, a year later as a Black Lantern, and everybody's like, who the hell is this guy? I mean...
You know, most people are calling for less killing of characters, not more.
Bob is calling for blood.
I don't mind if they kill. I want them to kill characters where it's significant, because I'm tired of every time, like, a Geoff Johns event happens, and then every single member of, like, Teen Titans from 1991 to 1993 dies, because no one fucking knows who the fuck Argent is anyway, so it doesn't matter if you kill her, you know what I mean? Like, I'm tired of that shit. If you're going to kill somebody, kill goddamn Hal Jordan, you know, kill... fucking, I don't know, I can't even think of a character that hasn't died recently, but, you know, kill one of those guys. I don't really care if you kill people, honestly. Like, I think it's not even that it's the killing. I think it's just, it's the poor writing associated with it. You know, because the X-Men just did a big event, and they killed off, like, at least 3 major characters in their event and stuff like that. And people pissed and moaned about it, but generally the consensus was that it was actually a pretty solid event, that it took them, like, 4 years to put together. So when people died at the end of it, it all made sense, and it kind of played itself out logically, whereas in, you know, you read these issues, and it's just like, hey, where's the nearest minority? Let's just blow them in half and stuff. So it's just not the same thing.
Well, issue that I also had, and this goes back into the Blackest Night, goes back into the Blackest Night thing. I mean, when it was reviving these characters and it was repossessing these characters like Superman and Superboy and things like that, I'm surprised that it didn't take over a lot more of the Green Lantern characters that were actually alive that, you know, had died at one point. And what I'm getting at are people
Kilowog,
like
Guy Gardner.
Kilowog and Guy. I mean, Guy died even though it was, you know, technically because of his Voldarian stuff. I mean, he's alive, but he died. I mean, he was dead for a few seconds, you know.
Seemed pretty clear-cut. Like, he went to hell. Like, Superman had to, like, bring him back.
So, I mean, you know, I was just surprised that they limited it to just some of the characters, you know, and... So I don't know. I mean, I guess we just have to wait a year to figure out where all this is going to go. I mean,
all right, Carlton, go for it.
Shoot.
All right. You know, one of the things I was really looking forward to was Firestorm, because there was a character I first got introduced to in the old Super Friends days as a character I thought who had a lot of potential. I mean, like Green Lantern, he can manipulate things, but not just his own construct energy, but all sorts of material around him. And so in that case, I kind of want to read about him. But, you know, for the most part, he's kind of been just killed off and put off on the side and all that stuff. And so we get to this point, and I'm not sure. I mean, I think this has potential. I mean, you know, the ability of him, the Big Bang, I mean, it's kind of silly at some points, but they could really do something with it if they were really willing to. And I think as long as they don't just use it just as a doomsday clock, don't get mad at him or you might destroy the universe kind of thing, I think it can be done well. And I want to see where this goes. I really want to see where, like, you know, at the very last page with it, with him where we have the sort of like the awakened Black Lantern-looking Firestorm thing?
Like Deathstorm or something like that?
Yeah, that kind of got me. That kind of got me excited. Not only because it looked beautiful, by the way, I loved that, the way that page looked, but it's just like you kind of wonder how these guys will have to overcome their own issues, because unlike every other hero who's had to deal with some kind of challenge, they're going in without powers against the most powerful being in the universe.
Yeah, I think the whole thing is that they're going to have to really come together as friends, as normal, non-powered friends, to come together and beat him somehow, and that'll be their big bonding
experience. It'll be one would need to forgive the other for the murder of his girlfriend, and one would need to forgive himself for the murder of the guy's girlfriend. Yeah. So
I think it'll be cathartic. I think it'll come down to a battle of the mind, because Firestorm or Deathstorm, whatever he calls himself, seems to go down to that same way that Ronnie Raymond did as the Black Lantern, kind of a moron acting character.
I feel like they'll want to keep Deathstorm around just as a good Firestorm villain. I mean, who else does he have?
He has Ding Rhames.
They could actually kind of split the Firestorm Matrix. You know, like they try to force it back in themselves, and Deathstorm fights it, end up getting kind of a split, like two evenly powered reality manipulators.
Lame.
Basically what you're doing is you're saying something like the Big Bang, and now an evil bad guy control. You know, the nature of comics for the bad guy to have a bomb, and the bomb's going to go off and destroy the entire universe, and we know the good guys are going to stop it and stuff like that. But I think that's my biggest problem with, like, the way a lot of the Green Lantern storylines have played out the last few years. If they are actually fighting any bad guy's plots, the bad guys don't really have any plots, per se. They kind of just bring their bomb to the place they're going to blow up, and they try to blow it up, and the good guys stop them and stuff. But I feel like this Firestorm thing, because we've seen all this before, I think all the drama from Firestorm being a Black Lantern, it comes from one of the kids being in his head. Now it's kind of interesting, I guess, that they're both in his head, but I don't know. I feel like we've just kind of seen this thing before, and it just feels like kind of a cheap stunt to pull something back, and I don't know. I'm not really – out of all the cheap tricks that Brightest Day is pulling, I think bringing Black Lantern and Firestorm is the cheapest trick of all of them.
I think it's just bad because we already know how it's going to end.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
But on the one hand, I mean, we have something like that. Like Grant Morrison said just a little while ago about, you know, there really isn't any original stories anymore. Now it's more about putting a fresh coat of paint on old stories.
Oh, yeah.
And which is kind of does, in a way. I forgive lots of aspects of it in that sense.
Like I said, I like the idea. I thought the best Blackest Night taking advantage of, besides the Spectre, the best usage of Blackest Night was the Firestorm with the with him and the other kid like that. Like, I think that was the best use of it. I just think at this point it's kind of like, it's not that they're putting a new code on it, they're doing the same story, you know what I mean? So, and now there's just bigger stakes, I guess. I mean, I don't know. It's not that interesting to me.
Karen, you were saying?
Well, I was just thinking I would certainly pay at bare minimum $1 for someone to write some sort of a superhero story where the bomb that's introduced in the first act actually goes off in the third act and, like, the last three pages are just blank. Be like, oh, yeah, sorry, guys, the superheroes didn't win this time, and scene. But that could be the wine I've been sipping all night talking, so.
They did that once in Zero Hour, didn't they? Didn't we have, like,
yeah, they kind of did.
Yeah, it did actually happen.
I want that to be the end of the series. Like, I want that to be, like, that's it, that's done. No retconning, no nothing. The universe just ends, that's it, that's done.
No continues.
I don't want any, like, do you want to continue, do you have another quarter? Like, want something to end a comic book series that way, where the bad guys win and the universe ends. Ta-da.
Game over, you and your friends are dead.
Yeah.
You do, like, if you look at, like, Crisis on Infinite Earths, though, like, the original Infinite Earths, like, that's I mean, it's funny because we kind of like, at the end, they more or less win and stuff like that. But you're talking about there was, like, hundreds of realities, you know, and, like, billions and trillions of people. And they all got killed. The only people, that, like, one Earth lived of, like, you know, the couple billion people. That's it. Everyone else in the entire multiverse was destroyed. So, I mean, more or less, it's kind of like, even though Anti-Monitor loses at the end, he should pat himself on the back. He's like, I did a pretty solid job of destroying everything.
Yeah, yeah. You know, 999 of 1,000 isn't bad.
Yeah. Killed everything.
That's still an A average, regardless of what school you go to.
He has a good track record. He has a good track record. Let us move on to Emerald Warriors.
Yeah, we need to move on.
Yeah, we need to move on here, guys.
This is Emerald Warriors 2.
No,
right?
No, wait. We're moving to Emerald Warriors.
This is, in fact, Emerald Warriors 2. That's correct.
No!
Yes!
Okay, enough.
I'm talking about the book we're talking about.
Hey, geez. Jesus.
Listen, in regards to Emerald Warriors
2. So Emerald Warriors 2, guys. Eric, what did you think of this issue?
I think the art is awesome in the series. I think this issue was a waste of time, a complete waste of time.
Hell yeah.
Nothing I disagree. I watched it.
Everything that happened could have happened in 3 pages.
Yeah.
I feel like it happened last issue. I feel like all that stuff happened last issue.
Yeah, I have to agree.
I think this issue does a better job of everything that happened in the first issue happening.
So he's like, work. Let's just do it again. Forget it. Like, forget the first.
Yeah, it's Evil Dead 2, you know? It's just the same thing, but better.
I was about to say, I feel like it's like a bad action movie where we get, like, it starts off with, you know, big action scene, and then we're going to get, like, 5 issues of exposition.
But I don't feel like the writing was bad at any point. It just felt familiar, like we'd seen this last month.
It was bad.
Really? I mean, what was bad about it?
The art wasn't that great at points either, just saying.
The entire argument between Gaia and Kilowog.
That was a little
awkward. That was
kind of
weird.
Well, just the same. They were just giving us exposition, and I'm like, you don't need to give us the exposition. Anybody reading the series, the way Emerald Warriors 1 was written is if you've never read a Green Lantern comic before, you're fucked. Like, it's not for new readers. It's people already reading Green Lantern comics, which was their one first mistake, honestly.
I disagree. I disagree because I read, and this actually was one of the first issues of Green Lantern that I'd ever.
Oh, snap. What now?
Booyah.
In your face.
We have to have a newbie, bitch. Okay.
You don't know who Apophis is. You don't know who Bleeza is. You don't know anything about Guy Gardner's unless you know about Black Knight, the Red Lantern stuff. I mean, it's all continuity heavy, you know?
Oh, no. I was going to say, he's absolutely right. There was a whole bunch of stuff in issue 1 that I had no idea what the hell was going on. But that is so par for the course for me thus far, so that I really didn't bat much of an eye at it. I was really excited that a whole bunch of people didn't die, because I feel like I'm being forced to care about people I really have no reason to care about. When someone dies, I should be like, oh, and not, wow, I really don't want to be a Green Lantern.
Sucks to be them.
Yeah, but I really think that they did a better job setting up Emerald Warriors as a series in issue 2 than they did in issue 1.
I feel like it should have been like a double-sized issue, number 1, including this one, or something. But
issue one was like a pilot of a TV series, like, hey man, look, this is all cool and edgy. And issue 2 was like, you know, the second episode was like, okay, let me sit you down and tell you what the show is really about.
Okay, we got the network to agree to it.
If there was a pilot, it would be these 2 issues put together, but like later on in syndication, they'd be like part 1 and part 2, but...
It
feels like issue 2 is the director's cut of the pilot.
Yeah.
Where you're a big fan and you get the DVD and you're like, I'm so excited to see the director's cut of the pilot. And then you watch it and you're like, wow, this is actually really boring, and I'm glad the studio stepped in and made it more exciting, you know? Because, like, the second issue is better, more or less, but if you just take the opening scene of the second issue and replace the really awkward opening scene, I mean, get replaced by the good opening scene of the first issue, because Guy Gardner literally is standing there, he's like, hey, Ring, first off, doesn't he tell his Ring to make constructs of, like, his friends? It's like, dude, you could just think of that. You don't need to tell the Ring. Ring's like, all right, I guess we're verbalizing commands now all of a sudden. So, like, he makes big constructs of his friends and just walks around their faces for a few minutes being like, Kyle touches it, love you, what are you doing? You're so awkward. Like, think about it. Like, everybody else, just use the narration. Yeah, you know.
That's for the new readers. That's for them to get to know.
The new readers. That's gigantic. It was awkward.
It technically wasn't his Ring he was using to verbalize the constructs of the face.
There's no reason he can't There's no reason he can't visit them. Like, I mean, we don't
know. He could totally just walk up to these guys going, hey, what's going on, guys?
Yeah, Kyle is all
No, but
he has
been creepy.
Like 2 issues later, Halo's like, go see Raynor. So Kyle is clearly on Oa at this time.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, the point is Kyle, that right? The point is that it's stuff he would tell them after he's done the shit that he's about to do. So he couldn't walk up to Kyle and tell him, hey, Kyle, I just killed off blah, blah, blah for blah, 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 if he hasn't done it yet.
Imagine this. What happened with Kyle, okay, because I'm not sure if him and Guy lived together. I know they didn't, but it seems like they did. So say Guy makes this giant case of Kyle into it.
I would
like,
so
I this thing
kill
terrible
for there to be a comic book of that.
That would be great. The Kyle and Guy.
So Kyle and Guy live together. And Guy to talk, to spill his innermost secrets to Kyle, makes a giant face to Kyle, starts talking to him. Now you're Kyle, you walk in the middle of the night and you see this, you think it's really awkward, Guy didn't notice, leave. Because you're like, wow, that's weird. I don't want to know what that's about. I'll come back
later. That would be awesome if you just had...
Kyle wakes up in the middle of the night, like he's like wearing boxers and walks out, like, see these guys like looking at his head, like stroking it, like, I don't even want to know, dude.
And then he's like, six months later, Guy says, Kyle, like, here's all the stuff I was doing, gives him the recording. And Kyle goes, is that why you were talking to that giant face of me 6 months ago? And he's like, oh, You saw that? I did see that. And then the first thing Kyle says is, why did you make a giant face of me to talk to me when you need to record something? And also, you don't need to make a video camera to record it either. But why did you make a giant face of me to talk to me? And Guy will not have an answer for him, so therefore the story doesn't make any sense.
Well, that's not the first time we've seen Ring Construct video recorders. I mean, that was in, the Final Night? Zero. Yeah.
See,
I mean,
I did kind of like the whole little... Brady Bunch kind of opening with all the faces because I got to see a pretty Kyle and not Kyle who really is in desperate need of like a shave and a haircut. But
here's the story of a man named Jordan.
Yeah,
it's like old Batman story where he like pulls up the files of the Justice League and it's just a picture of Ted Kord says, Lupito, alias Ted Kord, powers, ninja skills, and I'm like, why are you reading that? And it's like very little amount of information. It's just
ninja
Ted.
Skills. No,
like,
skills.
How can I defeat Ted?
It didn't say that.
Well, what I want to know, I guess according to that, is if he's going to make these giant faces, which, I mean, the whole issue to me, it seemed like Guy was modeled after Val Kilmer. So the idea of him being a giant egomaniac talking to a giant construct of his own face totally worked for me. But why did he make a giant construct of his own face?
Okay, again, he didn't create the giant constructs of his own face.
Whatever.
Of their faces. Okay, we're sticking on to this whole face thing too much now.
we covered two pages of the issue in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't think Kyle's hair looked right in those face scenes.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
so we can all agree that the vampire is
a fever dream.
I don't know if it was... Did the mask look porous to you guys? I don't know.
I actually have a good comment to make.
So we can all agree that the main point of this issue was successful, that it got them from Oa to space.
Yes.
Does Kyle normally part his hair on the right side?
No. I think he's on the left.
Let's stop talking about the cosmetics of the issue. Okay, here's my big question. I'm being serious. How in the world are they going to explain in issue 3 how Bleeze leaves this blue planet without being cleansed? And I mean, still make the whole story. You know, it's like the shit's really going to hit the fan in the third issue, I believe, because Guy's going to have to really fully explain stuff. I mean, is Gambit even still on the what is it, Odium or Odium or however you say it? No. Is he there or is he back on Oa?
He's on Odium.
He's still on Oa.
Or on a side.
Well, I mean, it's like, so...
He kind of ditched the
Blue
Lantern. I don't
know. I think 3 is going to be the telling point of the series because it's going to be the most awkward one to explain in a way for the readers to say, okay, yeah, 1 and 2 could be combined. And you know, in retrospect, I look at 1 and 2, and you guys are right. I mean, they could have just extended it or done something, and then it could have been one issue. But this next issue that's coming up is really going to be the tricky one because there are just so many pieces, I mean, at play. I mean, you know, they're on the blue planet, and we got the guy who supposedly goes there to get cleansed. Now we got Bleeze there. It's just going to be a real interesting issue, the third one. The second one,
I think one of two things is going to happen. Either Bleez is going to die, kill off another minority.
Or she's a minority!
She's an alien.
He would join the team.
Let him press his point.
Either Bleez is going to die, or she's going to become the leader of the Blue Lanterns. For no reason whatsoever.
Or she's going to join the Emerald Warriors.
No.
Yeah, that sounds easier.
She can join the team. So I like the idea that Kuan is predicting what has happened in every other time a story like this.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll tell you what I would like to see happen. What I would like to see happen in issue 3 for Orisa to say, you know what, screw Sodom. I would rather have Bleez. And it just to turn into the next 6 issues of this big lesbian road trip. And Emerald Warriors. That would just be amazing for me.
Gonna make a, really
maybe not the end of the galaxy, but definitely the ends of the world.
Hey, after my last comment about the minorities, I should add a disclaimer. I mean, no offense towards anyone of any gender, species, blah, 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 religion. Okay, so I love everyone equally, kumbaya, and all that stuff.
Okay, I will honestly say, seeing that we're like 30 minutes into this podcast now, if anyone's still listening to this point, I'm surprised.
Can I say how much I loved Migliari's cover for issue 2?
Go ahead.
I loved the cover so much. Like, my eye keeps getting drawn to the boots that Bleez is wearing, and I wicked want them badly. Sorry to bring it back to these superficial kind of looking whatever. I just really loved the cover. I think it's stunning. I think it's dynamic, and
I think they would suit you.
So
if Muffin.
I understand how much you like the boots. I mean, you made reference to Carol Ferris boots and
so
stuff.
So what you're saying is that at Dragon Con next year?
Yeah, but these look like real boots.
Yeah, these look like actual functional boots.
Yeah, these look like. I mean, I've seen women wearing these boots. So I mean,
like a Julie Strain kind of a thing, actually.
Yeah, my girlfriend has blood wings. Those are the boots she wears.
What?
Yes, his girlfriend does have blood wings.
When she's age, yes, when she goes to the I do like that Bleez is hopefully now not going to be killed. I think that'd be kind of random. I do like that Bleez is going to become...
You're saying that Bleez is hopefully not going to be killed?
Damn it, Kuhan!
Everybody just get really quiet for a minute so you learn your lessons, and then we'll start talking.
Terrible joke.
We're judging you. We're judging you harshly.
I'm used to
we're
it.
Not, and we're, I'm not judging you silently. You are being judged.
You have been judged and found lacking.
You're constantly judging you at a consistent rate, just double the amount of judging you normally, I assume, do to you, like now.
Well,
this story reminds me of, the Sins of the Star Sapphire story, which is something I really liked. Back when they were doing the other Green Lantern Corps guy was working on, Patrick Gleason and Peter Tomasi. And I liked it because they had a Star Sapphire in that story on, who was just the character in and of himself, who was doing stuff the Star Sapphire could do, but was really taking advantage of the fact that multiple Corps, because I've complained before that I think they haven't really done anything with the Corps besides have them be around, you know, and then just dumbing down the characters to kind of what you'd expect them to be, you know. I mean, Marv Lees is a very caricature, you know, and Atrocitus is a caricature, and St. Walker to caricature and stuff, and you really don't get a lot of personality, so I appreciate, like, them letting these characters kind of, like, be other Lanterns that aren't green, kind of hang out the title, so I think it's pretty cool. I mean, that she's going to join the team seems kind of obvious, but if she doesn't, that's too bad, because I think she should. So.
The hijinks that would ensue.
Does anyone think so?
They don't make me, like, you know, like the character, because I don't.
What do the Red Lanterns do all the time? Because they constantly vomit blood, right? They have to constantly be Red Lantern. So they can't, like, eat or anything, right? So, like, when they stop for, like, food, is she just going to sit there and vomit blood in the corner so nobody can sit in the restaurant? Like, I don't understand.
The idea of her vomiting blood is what's going to keep her out of the restaurant, not the fact that she has, like, flaming bone wings. And,
Well, have you ever read a DC comic? Have you read a DC comic in the 90s?
It's not like someone's going to stop her for having flaming bone wings.
I concede the point. You have my apologies.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to the restaurant at the edge of the universe or whatever.
Okay. You know, I haven't heard from Brandon enough tonight.
Yeah. Have not met our Brandon quotient yet.
Emerald Warriors, I have nothing else to say.
Okay. Thanks, Brandon.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to move on now, because we're going to move to Green Lantern Corps 52.
I liked it, kind of. There we go.
I liked it, kind of.
Oh, yeah, Muzard. Yeah.
it's a conclusion of the storyline that we've had since the new artist and writing team started up for Green Lantern Corps. So, as a conclusion of the story,
yes.
What does everybody think?
I didn't like it.
Not a very good conclusion.
I loved it.
Yeah, but you're also one of five people in the world.
I want single answers right now, before I start picking up you.
I'm with Musard. I loved it. I thought this was an excellent conclusion on many levels. Yes.
Eric, Guhan.
A little bit abbreviated, but it was good. It's good.
I thought it was okay. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it.
I don't even know what I thought about it, to be honest. It kind of just happened. I mean, the very first issue of Core that I bought had, you know, Cyborg Superman. I had no idea who the hell he was, and now I'm just kind of like, you poor dumb bastard. I don't know.
Okay, Eric, what's your thought?
What?
That's good enough.
What? Okay, thanks.
Too easy.
What? I was actually really disappointed. I didn't think it was all that good. I think the first couple issues stretched the story out like crazy. The last two or three issues, like, compressed too much story into too little space. I think this is really anticlimactic. I think the cover was insanely misleading, especially considering, like, you know, normally covers have huge fighting.
This is a single answer.
But the cover specifically said for Superman versus Gantt in Mortal Kombat, like, really corny, says, they're going to battle, and then Gantt literally doesn't go anywhere near in the whole issue, you know? And I mean, I think it's anticlimactic to have Boudica go inside, like, have a mind fight with him and cut him in half. I think it's read very much like a generic kind of, like, 90s teen title where the stakes weren't very
generic
high.
Generic turtleneck?
How could the first few issues make it drag out too long and then the last few issues compress it too much if there's only been, like, four issues with the writing team?
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's the first issue.
Talk about two
nice
and then two.
Right?
Yeah. He said two are too long and two are compressed. So that equals.
Yeah, it's too much. And it's funny because you think he'd know what he was doing. With it. I don't know. I just felt like it was all kind of like out of nowhere. And then it's funny because then it's like he gets cut in half and you're like, oh, does that mean he's dead? And then Boudica makes a point to say it twice in dialogue. And I think that's kind of anticlimactic. You know, if you shoot a guy in the head and say he's dead, he's dead. No, he's dead. Don't check. He's dead. Oh, don't worry about it. He's dead. It's like, I don't know. It didn't really go anywhere. And it was what was actually the only thing I really liked about it is that you saw the Green Lanterns actually helping people for once. Like those robots were being taken over, which I didn't realize was really happening until the second last issue. But, you know, they sort of saved the planet, and that was kind of cool. And watching Hank Henshaw, like, control, turn them all into a fist was really cool.
Yeah.
But overall, it was kind of like a lot of meh. You know, like a lot of meh. And I still don't quite understand what Henshaw thought he was doing. Like, why taking the batteries out of the lanterns would at all help Gantt be able to turn him back into a human. And, you know, and it's funny, because I'm a little confused as to what happens at the end, because Gantt said something to Boudica, like, oh, your tone is different. It's like you're not a robot anymore. And she's like, maybe you're just looking at me differently. And I'm like, no, your tone is different. You're not a robot anymore. And then the next thing that happens is then she's like, oh, and Gantt gave the spark of life back to all the other Alpha Lanterns. I'm like, how did he do that? And if he could just do that and the Guardians are so okay with that, why are they okay with that? Like, why didn't they just give them all life in the first place? Why did they turn them all into robot assholes? Because then they give them all awards for doing that and stuff. And the funny thing about it is they're like, here's all these awards for doing what is basically your job. Like, you know, a cop goes to, like, somebody's house and arrests them. He doesn't get to be king of all cops, you know? Like, it's just like, you can't just promote everybody who was there because a bunch of them were possessed and now they're not possessed anymore, you know? Okay. And especially considering,
you know, what I think all this relates back to being very serious, the Scar, I think she partially neutered all of the Guardians during this whole thing. And, I mean, I'm being serious because everything that's happened since then, they've been too agreeable on just about everything. And we already know the Blackest Lanterns are going to make a reappearance at some point in the next year. So, and we know that Gantt, you know, is looking at the book and stuff like that. So, obviously, the Blackest Night or the effects of the Blackest Night are not over. And the whole issue, just real quick to put my two cents in, and I'm going to have to sign off. We have a storm moving through, and we're probably going to get disconnected anyway. The big deal is it felt rushed. It was very anticlimactic with the way Cyborg, I mean, I guess Boudica can now say, he's dead to me, or he's dead in my mind, or something. I mean, it just felt really weird for me for a character that for, you know, basically, what, two or three years in real time has been trying to die. That's all he wanted. And he gets it, and but it doesn't seem real. I mean, I don't know. It was just it was a weird read for me. I think I said I hated the issue. I didn't really hate it. I just didn't like it either. I'm kind of in between on it. And I really, really hated the misleading cover. I mean, I was hoping that, you know, Henshaw and Gantha were really going to square off.
I'm mad about misleading covers. I mean,
that always happens.
Yeah. I mean, it does happen a lot, but.
I know. It's part of the comic world, and I respect that. But in the same vein, I was hoping it was just going to be this big, you know, maybe not even a big battle, maybe a one-page battle. But we didn't even get to see that. I mean, it was like, wow. And then here's Boudica on her dying, you know, while she's dying or recovering or whatever she's doing. She kills Henshaw with a thought. In her mind, or in her body, or wherever he was. That just sounds so wrong. But anyway, I don't know. I mean, I can't even passionately argue one way or another about the issue, because once again, it just, I don't know.
Okay. Also, I think the story itself was fundamentally broken, because the whole point is that Henshaw is trying to die. So any kind of resistance he has to, I mean, obviously he fights off the Horde and the Green Lanterns because he wants to continue doing whatever. But at that point, he had said to Gantt, like, oh, now take the thing out of my chest so I don't die. At this point, all they really had to do was play along for another minute or two, and they would have solved the problem, you know what I mean? And then Henshaw gets attacked, so he's like, oh my god, I better smash them all. And then he jumps into her head, and he starts fighting her instead of letting her kill him. His whole thing is he wants to die. Why didn't he just use that moment to be like, oh good, I think I can die now, cut me in half, kind of thing, you know? Like,
you know,
well, the answer is that maybe he knew that she wouldn't be able to kill him, so...
Yeah, maybe this has happened to some degree before. Maybe he knows he can't be killed even in that method. I mean, he's a being of pure energy. What's splitting him in half going to do?
Why wouldn't you let her try? Yeah, but I'm saying, why wouldn't you let her try? Why wouldn't he just go through it? I understand, like, the idea of fighting off the Hordes in order to get Gantt to kill him and stuff, or to take his thing out so he can die and stuff like that. But essentially, he was asking Gantt to turn him back to a human so he can actually be killed. You know, wouldn't the Green Lanterns want that? I mean, how much more interesting would the story have been if they charged in at the last second and Gantt said, no, wait, I've been around for 2 billion years. I'm actually a peaceful creature at heart. Let me just put this guy back to normal. We can throw him in a science cell. And that's how the story ended. Like, how it would have seemed sort of anticlimactic and stuff like that. But they still could have had the big battle and everything, and that would have been a really interesting end to the story, because then you would have had Henshaw as a regular dude, which is what he wanted in a science cell.
I think that would be an interesting end to the story.
Yeah.
That's actually a very, very well thought out.
That's the problem.
And then
it works. It definitely works.
I was almost going to throw that up to you guys. Like, how would you guys rather it end? That's actually a pretty good way to end.
And then you get this thing where Henshaw now is a brand new character who has to figure out a brand new motivation for his character, but he can still look like Cyborg Superman and still be the design.
Or on suicide
watch in his science. So.
We should get Bedard back and like let him hear these thoughts.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Definitely. Or that he can kill himself and then show up as a black lantern. I'm just saying, like, then you really would have had a better ending, because it just stops making sense at a certain point. You know, like, it's just fundamentally flawed. We have a villain who doesn't want to live, fighting for his life. You know, it's like, why are you fighting here? Just let her do it, dude. You know?
Maybe he believed that Gantt was a better chance at killing him than Boudica's thing was, and Boudica's thing would only stop him from getting his chance.
The page, the four Stell page where all the robots start revolting and all the lanterns show up, is it just me, or does everybody's face just look weird?
I hated the art in this issue. I hated the art in this issue completely.
Well, it's the last issue of this artist, so...
Really?
I know, thank goodness.
What's wrong with the art in this?
Okay. The next guy they're getting is also like a Top Cow Mark Silvestri ripoff dude, so it's not going to be any better, I don't think. But
I like that this is the first time we've seen Boudica in the flashback or in the mind's eye or whatever, what have you. This is the first time that Boudica has actually looked like Boudica in like a decade.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I did notice that the first thing that John and Kyle did after going to OA was shave.
Yeah.
They didn't shave.
Bless them.
Yeah, I mean...
Look at the second to last and last page.
I mean, John.
Look at the last phase, John.
Actually, no. Actually, John does have some stubble there.
Yeah, John just grew.
Actually, between the second to last page and last page, I think he grew some stubble.
John grew a lot of hair between the second to last page and last. Because the second to last page, he's totally clean cut, and then the last page, he grew.
Now that's a real man.
Welcome to the Green Lantern Salon podcast, guys. What the fuck?
All right, then. Enough of, you know, facial hair, hair cleaning.
Where's Boudica's second ring? Damn it.
What?
Where's Boudica's second ring?
I've heard a lot of complaints about his this guy's art is that he forgets rings, so maybe that's just a pattern.
You can also see in that last panel that Ganthet doesn't have his ring on any figure. Yeah.
Boudica's got better
rings. Boudica doesn't.
Wait, I got another complaint. Who's Kyle waving to?
Wait. He's waving to the audience, people.
Okay.
Eric, what's your complaint?
Wait, at the end when they give everybody the promotion to the honor list, this isn't really a promotion, it's just kind of like, hey, now you have to commute anywhere at all times. But like, when they give everybody the promotion to honor lanterns, Kyle and John were already on honor lanterns, weren't they?
No. Kyle was an alpha lantern.
I think they were just formally making everyone who wasn't an alpha lantern into an alpha lantern.
Did just get demoted? I have no idea what just happened.
Yeah, but they shouldn't have had Kyle like, oh yeah, thanks. It's,
yeah, he thanks anyway.
That's like Kyle's waving. He's like, hey guys, I was already one of those guys.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, you get to be an alpha lantern then? No.
They turned Kyle into an alpha lantern. That's a promotion, bitch.
We didn't tell you. Oh yeah.
There's that. Like, well, I guess I do want to move up the ladder.
I mean, clearly this is just an excuse to show us the cast for the book.
Necessary.
Huh? And give us.
It's served many purposes. You bring a big villain into things. You introduce the new cast, and you give them each of the little arcs a halfway decent resolution.
Yeah, it explains why.
It accomplished everything.
With them instead of you know being Kyle's second partner.
It's a big statement.
Here's my question. Now that John and Kyle and Guy are all honor guard, does that mean Hal's not going to have a second partner?
Good.
We've mentioned this with the Bedard, remember?
Yeah, we mentioned this to Bedard, and he's basically...
He's not sure.
He doesn't know, and why would...
He mainly doesn't know because Jeff Johns hasn't made the decision yet.
Rating card.
Remember, Jordan is one of the new Guardians now, or whatever.
So technically, maybe he's not...
I'm pretty sure if we had Jeff Johns on here right now, he'd be like, oh yeah, I guess he doesn't have a sector partner right now, huh? Oh yeah.
He's like a
Caradoriella.
Dude, his sector partner is Larfleeze, okay? His sector partner is Larfleeze.
Just random.
His sector partner is a musical chair that changes every month.
Yeah.
So who's your sector partner? It's like, those new Guardian guys. Those are my sector partners. They're not Green Lanterns.
Hunter doesn't fight crime. Why does he need a sector partner? You know, like, all he does is smash buildings while helping his friends do things. You know, like,
they need actual sector lanterns who do their job.
Yeah, so as a matter of fact, they should replace him because there's nobody actually guarding Earth right now. You know? I mean, it was one thing when he was in, like, the JLA comics, too, so he was also sometimes fighting crime while
sticking
around in the Atlanta comics, but now he's not actually doing anything. He's literally following Larfleeze around being like, man, he smashes stuff. That's so crazy, you know, and then, like, Lobo shows like, Lobo, man,
he pulls
his
hair. Technically speaking, wouldn't the Guardians want him to keep Larfleeze out of trouble?
No, they shouldn't be on Earth in the first place, Larfleeze. And, you know, and then the best part about it is that even Hal even says, you guys promised you wouldn't come to Earth. It's basically what this is. It's an extended sitcom where Hal's in-laws come to visit, and, you know, and he doesn't get any work.
You know, in retrospect, this makes the Guardians really seem like dicks when they sold out the Blue Lanterns to keep him on the planet, and he left like that, like nothing, and hasn't gone back.
Yeah, and basically Hal is like, man, the project's due Monday, and Larfleeze just won't get out of the kitchen, you know? I'm like, you know. And then, like, he walks into the room, and this is wrecked the study, so, like, the typewriter, the P is missing on the typewriter. He's like, who took the P? And it's Lobo. It's like, Lobo, what are you doing here? Oh, I was in Albuquerque for the weekend, and I figured I'd stop by. Like, oh, this is so crazy. He goes to Carol, what are we going to do? And she's like, of course, because it's a sitcom, she's all hot, and she's like, oh, it'll be fine, I gotta go work at my secretary job or something, and he's like, oh, she wanted me to help me clean up and stuff. And,
yeah, you're missing the part, you're missing the part with the romantic drama where Carol is kissing Larfleeze, he's like, no!
Where's the part where all the minorities
die? Yeah, and then atrocious kids diapers and stuff.
You know, I feel like the people who actually like the issue haven't actually talked a lot about it.
Yeah. This feels like a hateful episode.
This is the most hateful episode we've ever had. Okay, so
Colton clearly loved it because Colton loves anything that comes out of Tony Bedard's mind.
Let's hear from Colton.
I personally really, really, really enjoyed the issue. I mean, there's a lot of things that we really needed that we got out of this issue. Like, for example, Jon Stewart being in the comic at all. I think that was a great thing about this issue.
The best part about
there hasn't
that
been enough
Jon Stewart
in the past couple of years. But all joking aside, I really did enjoy kind of a sort of resolution to the whole Alpha Lantern thing and Cyborg Superman at the same time. We had a pretty interesting moment with Cyborg Superman for the first time. He actually got rejected by something, you know, except for his wife.
Oh,
that's just wrong.
Zing!
He's a dick. He deserves it. Anyways, I really like seeing that he finally failed at some attempts instead of just being like, oh, I can't die. It's like, Slash! Mm. And he really needs to be taken out for a while. Even if this doesn't permanently kill him, he needs to need some kind of push towards the, yeah, you can be killed. Even if it's only just kind of a temporary measure. Because it's starting to get redundant, to be honest. I like the character, but maybe a few months in death will cool him down before the White Lantern ring comes to him and he's like, damn it!
Hasn't he been gone since, like,
mean,
Civil War, though?
Trapped in the Source Ball? Which part?
I think Cyborg Superman's kind of a cool thing.
His whole death in Sinestro Corps War was bullshit anyways, because as they remembered with this arc, it's like, okay, he exists as energy, and, like, it doesn't matter that a little piece of his head is still around. He can still move past that head and jump into something else, you know?
Yeah. Well, exactly, you know, and I think he's a good enough character. I mean, I like the idea of taking villains out. Like, when he got killed, and as much as I thought it was kind of silly that, like, Cyborg Superman was killed by Boudica of all people. I mean, it's cool that Boudica got to do something for the first time in a long time. But I thought it was kind of like anticlimactic, at least for that alone. But I mean, it was cool that he got taken out just because it's like, or at least we can say somebody got taken out and something actually is happening. But I think it could have been a better story with him.
Is it more anticlimactic that Boudica is the one to take out Hank Henshaw? Or is it more anticlimactic that Boudica, this random lantern, is the last person in line to defeat Crazy Hal Jordan?
What makes her so minor to you? I mean, she was a pretty major character.
No,
she had an effect on House history.
She's kind of somewhat major now, but, like, especially when she became a major part of House history, she was a totally minor character who I don't think anybody had ever heard of.
She had her own backup in the Green Lantern Corps Quarterly and. Like, a whole story.
She was a pretty popular character.
Yeah.
She was pretty popular. I mean, she's kind of like, there's like 60 ultimate warrior lanterns, like Hanu and Budokan, that kind of stuff. They're all like, I'm the most badass. It's like, all right, like 60 of you guys. So she's kind of like, she was a big deal when she was around. And I like Budokan. I think Budokan's pretty cool, so I'm glad that it happened. I just feel like Cyber Superman. First of all, Cyber Superman he started life as a Fantastic Four parody. Or analog, or whatever you want to call it, you know. Then he became a legitimate hardcore replacement for Superman. So he was one of Superman's worst enemies for, like, almost a decade, you know. And he was the guy that destroyed Coast City, which is, you know, the motivating factor of everything that Hal Jordan's done for the past, like, you know, 30 years and stuff. And so for Boudica to, like, take him out in some creepy mind, in some silly-looking mind space and stuff, just kind of like, oh, Boudica does that? It's not thematic, and it's not really that interesting, and I don't know.
But the idea is to put her over, and that accomplishes that in a big way.
I mean,
she doesn't just appear in the story. I mean, we're seeing the assembling of this new cast, and they need to get her over, and that's a pretty
good. And she really proved herself above and beyond all other Alpha Lanterns when she overcame. She kind of came out of this control in this Alpha Lantern way. She kind of forced herself back into control, which is the will of Green Lantern needs.
Yeah, but that just happened in the last page of the last issue, so it's not like she just showed up and then broke the control and then killed the guys. It seems like it's exactly what Andrew's talking about, that they put her over. And I actually am okay with that. I just feel like it's kind of shoehorned to the end of the story. An old X-Men
Maybe
story.
Maybe so. Maybe
and
so.
We're like fighting, and all of a sudden Rogue shows up and punches the guy, and Rogue's like, I'll get you, sugar. And it's like, you weren't even in the story, and that's so
well,
no,
I mean,
like, shut
it's
up.
Like, it's like what happened was, like you know, everybody in the new cast that they're setting up has done something cool so far. And
yeah.
Boudica, and they're like, crap, well, Boudica's in the cast, and we just brought her back, so she's got to do something cool.
Well, I mean, she did something that nobody else could do. I mean, as sort of a part machine, she's able to sort of take advantage of him sort of trying to possess her, and then kind of kill him, as nobody else could have done that. And that's,
yeah,
it was
know,
a good,
I actually think with
the best.
That, I don't think John got to do anything cool, considering you got, I mean, you know.
Yeah, he kind of didn't, did he? He'll get his time soon enough, don't worry.
I wanted to say that, you know, the only thing that John Furney did was, I don't know, say something about him being an architect in architecture, and then apparently fix Boudica enough with stitches.
I can build houses. Let me get a crack at that.
Yeah,
it's fine.
I don't usually use my ring much, but then I see John using it, and it's cool. It's like, what?
Look at John doing his architecture, man.
I can shingle the fuck out of this roof.
The Green Lanterns, the Alpha Lanterns are so complicated a piece of machinery that Cyber Superman had to kidnap a Guardian who's a billion-year-old being in order to take one apart, and he literally killed like three people just trying to get the battery out of them, and John has no problem reconstructing it in 35 seconds.
He doesn't really reconstruct her so much as patch her up.
The funny thing about any of that is also the fact that Gantlet is, you know, recharging his ring and goes like, wait, I'm going to recharge my ring. And he's like, oh, man, there's a total gigantic fight going out there, Gantlet. We've got to go out there and, you know, help out. He's like, no, wait, I'm going to rebuild our drill instructor.
Yeah,
he doesn't even come back.
He's not even honored or anything. Like, we don't see him in the last splash or anything. What?
Like, still, you didn't do
anything.
With this whole weapon air arc coming up, I think this is the perfect time to build up some more Jon Stewart moments, because there's this guy who constructs these like legendary weapons and creations, and Jon Stewart's thing, you know, he's an architect, so I think that'd be the kind of perfect kind of a counter enemy for him. Even though it's probably going to end up being a little bit more Kyle because he jacks his girlfriend.
A little too on the nose or something.
I say
this is comics. There are no such thing as subtlety.
John Stewart had his chance this storyline. I'm sorry he didn't do anything, guys, but you got to wait for the next storyline for this one. I want Kyle to do something in the next storyline. I hated that the only thing that Kyle did in the storyline was people in the narration box be like, Kyle thought of this really smart thing to do. We don't see him do it. He doesn't actually do it. Just somebody says that he was a great guy for thinking of it. You know, it's like we have to constantly remind people why he's part of the cast. You know what I mean? Like, it's disrespectful to his character, you know?
Did anyone else think that Hank Henshaw had like a great moment in the fact that he just literally forced his will into a billion robots and made them his slaves in an instant?
It
would have seemed more effective if it was portrayed better.
Yeah, exactly.
Like when he makes that giant hand out of the robots, and it's like that could be cool.
That's cool too.
Domination of an entire civilization with only his mind alone. You would think.
Yeah.
That he would have been able to put up a bigger fight against Boudica in her mind. But
is it worth mentioning that within all of these other stories that don't really receive endings and kind of go on and on and on to the next arc and arc, that we actually kind of got sort of a really good open and closed story arc out of this? I mean, it's got
I think it's a really good point. I think the Green Lantern Corps, since Peter Tomasi took over, has been pretty good with that. Now, a lot of his stories are open-ended, but yeah, if you did make a point where, like, six issues from the storyline would end, you would get a definitive ending for that story, at least. Like, Mongo might be, like, at the end of the last page, he'll be like, I'm totally fine, and when he thought he was dead and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But at least you could get conclusions and stuff. So, yeah, I'm glad that he's keeping that trend up. And, you know, I know that the Weaponer is going to be, like, a character that's going to be around. He's not going to die at the end of the arc and stuff like that, but, maybe we'll get lucky and be thrown in a black hole or something conclusive as opposed to just getting on his jet and saying, we'll see you next time, Green Lantern.
So I'm all pleased with myself because I picked up Rebirth, and I read Rebirth, so that's
congrats.
All. Congrats. Yeah. Thank you.
Good times.
So,
yeah.
I'm not a fan of that story.
It's fantastic. I have to say that's fantastic.
I'm not a fan of what it did, but it was a good story.
There was too much talking.
The thing that kills it for me is in the epilogue, the prologue, there's a part where Kyle is helping these guys out, and all of a sudden the ring starts to talk to him, and it starts translating their language, and Kyle's like, Ring, you can talk, and you can translate other languages? The ring had been talking to him before, and it translated the language for him constantly, because Kyle spent half the time in the Green Lantern in space, you know, like, where the rings constantly translating languages. So Jeff Jones, on the first page of his comic, kind of proved that he hadn't read any Green Lantern comics in the past 30 years, so I really had no interest in that. From that point on.
I didn't know who Kyle Rayner was before reading that issue.
Who is Kyle Rayner? All I know is he's not Hal Jordan.
that's basically how I went into the first issue. Who is Kyle Rayner? He's not Hal Jordan.
And I'm like, and honestly, Sinestro called him.
I can't wait to go on.
Why do you like Hal Jordan, Jeff Johns? Oh, because he does what needs to be done. Dot, dot, dot.
Because he's powerful from the waist down.
Oh, so he's basically any generic superhero, and you take away all the stuff that makes him unique. Okay.
He's America, man.
Because he fights crime, and he wears clothing. Oh, shit, you're right. I forgot that he wore clothing.
He's not nudist, man.
He's a fashion designer.
You know, it's funny, too, because then what Sinestro calls Kyle Sewer.
Sewer
like,
Rat.
Alley
Rat.
All of a sudden, right?
Alley Rat, yeah.
Alley Rat.
Yeah, which is funny, because it makes sense, because I guess he was in an alley when he got the ring, I guess, so Sinestro was not in the room.
How does he know that?
Yeah. he looked up Kyle on Wikipedia, like, okay, so he was in an alley, and Gettick said, worst story ever.
No. It is. I think it's Jeff Johns sees that Sinestro is kind of vaguely Middle Eastern looking, and Kyle has black hair, so he's like, oh, Aladdin. What do they say in Aladdin? Street rat. Can't say street rat, because that's obviously ripoff. I'm going to say alley rat. By coincidence, turned out that was an actual meaning. So he knows so little about Kyle, he actually thought Kyle was Aladdin from Disney's movie for a couple issues while he was writing.
What? That was a magical place you just took us.
I thought you were going to go a completely different direction.
You know, this is an indescribable thing.
That's how we end the episode, with me saying, I don't need to close anything. What the fuck are you talking about?
Frank, you should make a point to close it by mentioning in every other word the Aladdin thing. That way they can't edit it out.
Okay. And seeing that we've come to the conclusion of our episode, we stood at least one jump ahead of the breadline. Tonight's episode was clearly...
One swing ahead of the sword?
One swing ahead of the sword. And why can't any of us just get along?
Green Lantern is as strong as 10 regular men.
No, that's Prince Ali, damn it.
Same guy, come on.
Also be sure to check us out online at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com. You can also email us at contact@thegreenlanterncorps.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to check us out next time.
Be sure to check out Kirby Crackle, the performance of our opening thing, Room Capacity, at www.kirbycracklemusic.com. Also, check out the Roy Clark Method, performance of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at www.freewebs.com/Roy Clark Method.
This magic green, it is the color green, it can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me, it says how, what have you done with your life? People around you keep dying. Use your will to right the wrong, and don't make us wait.
Is day first because I'm not reading that shit?
Whoa, what is up with the echo? That's from Karen.
It's Karen.
That's me, sorry, hold on.
I love the background. That's me. What the hell? that's her ringtone for Andrew.
Listen to the Aqualad stuff.
Blackwalad.
No! Wow. Damn it.
Ah, yes, it wasn't me this time.
No, that's probably a chance to talk.
Yeah, just cut this out when we're done, West.
Damn it.
Millie West.
Yeah, you know what? The more I think about it, flaming wings, that sounds like something on a menu. I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know, I'm more of a flaming fries right. Kind of guy. You know, I want some buffalo fries.
I'm going to flaming wings right now.
Wait, the last issue before this, didn't we hit, wasn't the cover like Hanu and Kyle about to go at it and stuff?
Probably.
And
yes.
In that issue, it's basically Kyle touches Hanu's shoulder and Hanu like slaps him. He's like, get away from me, man, I'm doing something here. It's like, it's literally just like a swing match became like a cover centerpiece, you know. And the cover probably said something like, Kyle and Hanu, finally, to the death. And it's like, that's not what happened at all.
I think Tony Bernard's writes up his scripts, shows the cover guy, it's like, yeah, Hanu's going to show up, he's going to say hey to Kyle, and then the cover artist is like, what, Hanu fights Kyle? Awesome! It's like, that's not what I said. It's like, shut up, I'm drawing it.